This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 838, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
That was a long pause, Jim.
Well, I don't...
Tired of waiting, and I'm falling down. I'm a mean monkey, and I'm coming down. I've been waiting, waiting, baby, for you. Just a mean old monkey, I do anything you say I should do.
Hello and welcome to iFanboy Pig of the Week, episode 838. My name is Jim Viscardi, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
This feels weird to me. Everything's topsy-turvy, upside down. I wonder if people, like, listening to the cold open were like, what the hell was that?
Bit by bit, every time I've come to the show, I am just... You are ceding more and more power to me.
Sure, that's the way I look at it. I was like, can you please just do this? Because one more time, I'm going to have to stab myself.
That's it. Oh, man. Well, we are iFanboy, and each week, one of us picks the book they like best from their stack of comics, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about
that
book.
Did we skip the part where we said our names?
No, I said that. That's
we did?
Literally, we said that, and then you said, oh, that's weird.
You're right. You did do that. All right, go on. I'm not used to this position.
So, look, we talk about the book. We talk about other books. When we talk about the patron pick, we answer some listener email if we have time. Spoiler warning is right now. Turn back, pause, come back, exercise some caution. This week, Josh had the pick. That was a pretty good one. I'm going to just put that in there right before I let you you mention your pick.
Well, that's good. I'm glad I'm not just going to hear snoozing over on the other side while we talk about Rogues Book 3 from Joshua Williamson and Leo Max with colors by Jason Wordy. I've never seen that name. Isn't it weird when you see the colorist name on something like high end and you're like, well, who the hell's that? Letters by Hassan Osmani El Hao. This book for me came from out of nowhere. I didn't expect it. I didn't necessarily expect to like it. I think it was maybe the patron pick, the first issue.
And I was on the show with the first
were
issue.
You?
Yeah.
And was it the patron pick?
It may have been the pick.
Yeah, it's possible. It's really good. It's surprisingly good because of the fact that A, it was so unexpected. It doesn't read like Joshua Williamson. Or at least what I think of as Joshua Williamson, but it's a very different kind of thing. You know, Leo Max is perfect. And really, it has to do a lot with, like, I just didn't expect it. And now when it comes out, I go, oh, because it's off the beaten path of all of the other things that come from DC and whatever. And I've never spent a lot of time in Gorilla City, which is fascinating and fun. And this kind of book, the way that they're doing it is when you are on... I hate saying street level, but like you're in Gorilla City and you're like, oh, this is kind of what it's like there. And this is interesting. And, you know, the rogues being in the kind of weird position they are, and the machinations and backstabbing, and there's plans that they have to use to get through the bank. There's basically, it's a big heist book, but there's all this other stuff at stake, and there's all, you know, I think one of the things that's really cool is that I know the rogues kind of, you know, but I'm not like a rogues expert, and I think that he's done a really good job of setting up the relationships between all of these characters to the extent that, like, oh, I get the basic stakes of it. I get everybody's, it's like a very elegant bit of craft in the sort of setup. You know, in the old days, it was, you know, whenever anybody shows up on a page, somebody has to say their name. And I think that he did a very good, complicated version of that, you know, where when he brought the team together, you know, you met everybody for the first time, even if you didn't know them, you sort of got where they all were. I had no idea that Len Snart had a sister and she's a social worker. You know, I didn't know any of that, but, you know, and everybody's sort of reluctance or reason or why everybody ended up in the cabal, in the theft group, is sort of varied. And, you know, then the turn here is that, I don't know his name, but the ape who was the ape man of Angel and the Ape Man, I think. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Angel and the Ape? It's just the ape. Well, whatever it is, he's the private detective here who's, you're not sure whose side he's on, but since he was kind of a hero at one time or another, he approaches Snart and catches him and basically more or less blackmails him into, like, yo, I'll let you go. I'll let this all happen, but you got to kill Grodd. And I was like, ooh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Great setup.
Yeah, and it keeps twisting. It keeps adding to stakes. It keeps turning. It's like, it's not like massively experimental. It's just really, really, really well done. It's, you know, like in a Ocean's 11 sort of way. In fact, very much that way. It's,
yeah,
Rogue's Ocean's 11's in Gorilla City. It's kind of what it is. And, you know, it hasn't three books in. How many pages is this thing? It's extra size, right?
Yeah.
50 pages. Didn't even feel it. Like got done with it. And I was like, I'll take more of that. And so, yeah, it's just great. And, you know, there's not a lot of books that I super, super look forward when they come out. And I also forget about it, too. So every time one comes out, I'm like, oh, right, this book. You know?
Yeah, it's funny. This is probably a book that, when collected, I will go get. It looks good. I mean, it's like, it's interesting. Like, I basically, you know, moved to just being a digital reader, but if I was at like the comic shop, I would want, like, the covers would 100% get me intrigued. Okay. This is just, it's incredibly well packaged. The thing I actually like about the way Williamson writes this group of rogues is it feels like a bit more of a cohesive Suicide Squad. But the thing I don't really like about the Suicide Squad is that, like, it's like everyone is very much begrudgingly just like trying to like getting along, right? They don't really feel like a more cohesive group, and the rogues usually do. And it's incredibly evident here, even when they hate each other, and they do, and there's a lot of that in this.
And it feels like they all want to be there for whatever the reason is. Maybe not want to, but like, there's nobody like, well, what the heck's he doing there? Like, you get it. Right. Everybody who's there, you're like, I know why they're here. That's really good.
Yep. Yeah.
Would you have read this had you not been on the show the first time we did it? Like, is this a book you would have gravitated towards?
Yes. And I think mainly because of the cover. Like, again, this would have been an instance of judging a book by its cover, and its cover would have totally got me to try it out.
All right. That's cool.
And I'm glad I did.
I think they should have led with gorillas more from the beginning. I would have even been more of those, more like a late reveal in the first issue.
People do love Grodd.
I mean, like, every single element of the thing I find interesting in that, like, so the world that Snart comes from, the first page is sort of whoever the police or the sheriffs or all the, you know, science police, whoever they are in Lensnart's little weird trailer on the shore. By the way, that looks like expensive lakefront property. And I don't think that, like it's right under the bridge. It's, you know, and like that world they live in and who they're looking for. And then we cut to, you know, the classic detective office, you know, with the shades, casting those horizontal lines everywhere. You know, and every time you're sort of getting to know Snart, you keep having a... getting to know Snart. You know, you sort of have an idea of who he is, and you think, oh, maybe he's softening a little bit. But this is sort of the issue where you're like, oh, he's a bastard. Don't forget that he's a bastard. You know, and that just all worked for me. I don't know the characters well enough that it's still a little surprising, but also still makes sense. That's a lot of gold.
Right.
Just it's a perfect little comic book reading experience. It's like, oh, this is what you should be doing with Black Label.
Right. Like, and this makes sense. It's just enough. It's just down to earth enough while also being zany, like just yes, zany enough.
Yeah.
To that mix is really good. Yeah. To just like you, this is the only kind of storytelling experience that you get in comics. And that's what makes this so good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit of everything and yep. Nothing. I have no complaints. Like literally, you know, I wanted to read more, and that to me is, you know, time's precious, but when I get to the done and I'm like, man, when's that next one coming out? Like, and I just found myself like, I don't know how many issues this is. I don't know if it says on the cover, but it's on 3. And I thought, I hope 4 is not the last one. Like that would make me upset. I would like to see 5, maybe not 6. Hard to say. But yeah, look at the coloring. That's great. I don't, you know, this Jason Wordy guy, he figured out how to do it. So that's fine. Good for him. He's definitely got a, he looks like other people, but not, I don't know, like a Matthew Wilson kind of thing. Maybe not quite as bright as that. Anyway, I dug it. And that's your pick of the week. And I'm glad you liked it too. And I feel like I don't have anything else to say about it.
No. I mean, sometimes that's it. It's a good book. You should be reading it.
Fantastic Four, number 690, I believe, or 45 is what it would say on the cover, but that's not how we're playing it here. I think this is Dan Slott's last issue.
Is that a thing? Is that you guys are just sticking to that legacy numbering?
Yep. We will not go both ways. We're going to use the legacy numbering whenever possible. Oh. But in this instance, because it is, I'm almost positive this is Dan Slott's last issue. He sort of wrapped everything up.
Second to last, right?
Oh, well, good. I mean,
I think there's like a farewell one.
Okay,
after
this. But so this kind of wrapped up the story that he's been telling for 45 issues, other than the fact that Johnny Storm is still aflame and angry about it. I don't know if Fareed Karami is on art. It's like the end of your thing. Here's a guy. You know, but he did fine. We were good. You know, this is my, you know, when I fell for Dan Slott very late, you know, compared to everybody else. But, you know, through the entire course of this series, I've been like, wow, I didn't know I liked this guy so much. And I know you have been a fan for a long time.
I have.
You know, all through the Spider-Man stuff, that was your jam. You know, but I thought it was a good ending. I mean, it did what it's supposed to. Everybody got saved in the end who was supposed to. You know, Uatu fixes all the stuff.
And becomes the sole watcher.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no other watchers. It's just Uatu now.
You know, it is the best example of what I think Fantastic Four can and should be in the modern era.
Yeah.
It was just... I mean, you actually said it. You said it a little bit in the Rogues book, is that it's just the right amount of down to earth, or, you know, like in this case, I would say dramatic and silly.
Yep.
It's got all that arch goodness, and it just stops itself from going too far over one way or the other. And it's almost at a certain point, like I'd be hard to tell you if it was good or what was good about it, other than I just really like the experience. And I mean, I can say things that are good about it, but
sure.
You know,
one of the things I think Dan does really well is Dan is not afraid to go big. And with Spider-Man, you can only go so big, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic Four, you can go big. And like the fact that this issue, wrapping up Reckoning War, pretty much neatly puts away the fact that there was a giant Asgardian destroyer slash Galactus combo thing roaming around. That's fine. That's fine and well. Puts that bit to bed. Puts the fact that, right, like the Fantastic Four is working with a ton of other heroes, including Doom here and Silver Surfer. And they all kind of go, you know, their separate ways. The story of like the Watcher has been a thing that I didn't expect to see a result. Like this is stuff that goes all the way back to Original Sin, which was what, a decade ago? Where, right? I mean, just about, I guess, right? Where, right? Because you've also got, you know, at the end of this, the whole Nick Fury aspect is all cleaned up,
kind of.
I mean, mostly. You know,
he's still on the moon.
Right, that's right. He's still stuck on the moon.
In the robes and everything. And you know, like his head. I was like, that's the Vulture. That's not Nick Fury, but whatever.
Right. But there's a nice tease to S.H.I.E.L.D. Yes. coming back or some form, you know, some form of that.
It's better.
Yes. It's
better than it was.
Better than where the position Nick Fury was in before this.
Yes. He was a chain man.
Yeah, right. But like, you know, but even like the last line, right? Like, this is your watchtower. You know, you once more the man on the wall, the unseen humanity shield. Like, that was a great line to finish before the end. This is someone has like, I'm a huge Nick Fury fan, so like, sure. I'm all about this. And then you get a nice little stinger with Dr. Doom doing Dr. Doom things that you know and love.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and it's funny because they wrapped everything up, but I had expected the whole time for Johnny's super flamitude to be part of this resolution, and it wasn't.
Yeah. And I mean, on the cover for the next issue, it looks like he's not. So,
maybe that's kind of a spoiler.
I mean,
right, you know, I just expected whenever they had to beat the big bad, that was going to be the thing. And he was kind of, they were like, "Oh, why don't you come back with us?" And yeah, I guess there he is.
I mean, because I was saying like this. I mean, this series had everything. It had a
cosmic
control rod. It had Nihilus. It had the nullifier. It did
something that should never ever work. It gave Ben Grimm a family, and at the end, you weren't like, "Oh, this sucks. You ruined it." It worked. It worked really well.
Yep.
Like, these aren't the Flash kids. You're like, you know, and they're, it's, you know, it's Dan Slotty enough. It's got one's a Kree, one's a Skrull. They came up killing each other, and then they just became part of this thing. And it's interesting because if I think back, I was like, they did all this in 45 issues?
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot.
Yep.
Everybody in this is barrel-chested. Have you seen, like, look at it's page 6. There's Nick Fury, and he looks more like Dum-Dum Dugan. But he's not the same on the other panels on the page. There's a lot of barrel-chestedness on here.
But it's like this also had like it had the you know the Shi'ar were involved and the Starjammers were involved and Terax is you know is there in a bunch of parts and it's just like he basically took every cosmic character you could you know worth a damn and threw him into the pot and said let's do it.
I think it's kind of cool because I don't feel like I've read all of this, all this Reckoning War. I'm not sure where it happened, but clearly things happened in here that I didn't remember. Right. But it didn't take away from it at all.
It didn't.
Hey, why is Thor there? Who cares? It's awesome. Thor's there. And I didn't need to explain. It felt like when I was a kid, and I would find some random comics and read them, which is my favorite feeling in superhero comics.
I will say like this, because I have been reading Reckoning War, and this felt like those like big cosmic events Marvel used to do, right? Like, you know, Annihilation and War of the Kings and all of those. And then this, and it took place in a Fantastic Four book. It didn't take place in a quote cosmic book. It took place within Fantastic Four. And what a way to, and I think like, I would venture to guess that a bunch of people probably missed out on this because it was a Fantastic Four book.
Sure. But, I mean, at the same time, if they didn't want a Fantastic Four book, this wasn't it because this is a Fantastic Four book.
I mean, yeah. Oh, it totally is.
Right.
But it is way, but it's also way more than that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of platonic ideal of a Fantastic Four book. It really, yep. That was the whole time. And it was the book I didn't know I was missing in my life, you know, because Fantastic Four had gone pretty far astray. And I know that yep. Hickman's run was acclaimed and all that stuff, but I was like, I don't want this. It was not for me, and this was exactly what I wanted to be. Dan Slott did Iron Man before this, and it was fine. But, like, just him fitting into this, I was going to say Slott, but I'm not going to. Hey, help me with a thing. Franklin, at the end, is in some other pocket universe or something because of the Forever Gate, and he's digging it because he's got his powers back.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, if I turn myself into myself and come through first, then I can be myself. But does he have his powers back? Did they fix that?
I think so.
Wasn't clear, right?
Yeah, it was not clear.
Okay. And he's got black hair now. Like, I don't know if he used his god powers to give himself black hair because he was dying it, but now it's real. Which, by the way, you make a choice like that when you're a kid, you're going to regret it.
It's still jarring to me. It's been black for a while, and I'm still like, yeah. That's not Franklin.
No.
Put it back.
But I get it. Like, it was a thing. It was a character thing to fit. Like, I was, right. I was oh, like, yeah, I, no, totally, for sure. I totally get that.
No.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's one more thing that they fix, is all these sort of lingering bits. Yeah, look at chunky Moon Knight on the Fantastic, or the Avengers. What is that? It's the Avengers Fantasticar thing.
Yeah.
He's a squat son of a bitch. Vance Astro, too. They all look like wrestlers from the 20s. Yep, so I'm going to miss this a heck of a lot. Yeah. 45 issues is hard to complain about. And were they monthly or biweekly? I don't even I can't tell anymore, like, if I think back.
I want to say it was monthly, but
I
it could have
too,
been.
But who knows? It hasn't been. That would mean it's been three and a half, almost 4 years.
Yeah, it's been about
years.
4 years.
Okay. Good stuff.
Yep.
Moving ourselves over to Captain Marvel, which doesn't seem like it's that far over, but Captain Marvel, number 173, as in the legacy numbering. I picked this arc, not arc, I picked this series up somewhere in the middle.
Hmm.
10, 20 issues ago, something like that. And again, just like sort of the Fantastic Four book, I never really missed a stride. I think I picked up at the end of Carol beating the magician that in this issue she is on trial for.
Hmm.
And so I've never really been lost. It's sort of the same thing. Like, who are these characters? All right, I understand who they are. It's good. Setup for this has been really interesting because you've got this thing where all these magic characters, except that one creepy dude with the witch hat. Which, is that a real character? Who is his name?
Oh, yeah.
Alriak, king of the Snatmen. And he looks like the guy who takes the car, the Ferrari, in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Like, if he became a magician. But they're all putting Carol on trial because she removed the magic from somebody. Now, she had many good reasons to do that, but these magic people are like, no, you don't understand. That's some shit you do not do. And, you know, like, there's people you know and recognize on this little tribunal. So you've got Brother Voodoo, who they will just put into anything. You've got Scarlet Witch.
I miss Brother Voodoo.
Yeah?
A lot.
Yeah, like, old version of him?
Yeah, even when he was Sorcerer Supreme for that mm-hmm. little stint. Like, he was great.
That Remender did that. And I mm-hmm. think that, yeah, that was pretty good. But since then, he's not the same. He's not like Black Panther in yep. magic. Like, yep. he's the guy who everyone goes to, and he says the thing that's wise. And that might have been, I feel like that definitely wasn't who the character was. It's just that nobody knew who he was, so they just put him in stuff.
Yep.
And he's very silly. Yeah, so, you know, there's consequences of that thing that's going on, and it's got something to do with why Carol is imagining herself in this weird dream world that is all alien and spacey and super cool. Just kind of crazy. She has a sword, she's fighting monsters, don't know why. Now she's a baby dragon. It's a whole thing. Then we cut over to New York City, and I don't know. I expect you don't keep up with all the episodes we do, but we've had a thing lately where we're noticing that a lot of artists can't draw food.
Mm.
People can't draw how people hold or eat pizza. It's a real problem, but there's a sandwich in this pretty early on.
Oh.
And I got to say, the sandwich was really given justice. Like, it was drawn, like, a little too big. And like,
it is a comically large. It looks like a party sub.
For, like, a 110-pound woman to just go at it. It's a big sub, and she's super excited about it. And then she doesn't get to eat it, which really bothers me. So basically, you know, you've got, what's her name? Binary. Mm-hmm. Walking around, and there's some mystery going on. She was birthed of Carol's powers, I believe, in one of the issues after there was there's a lot in this. This series is not all that unlike Fantastic Four. It's just ping ponging all over the place, and it's great for it. And then so Binary's like Jessica thinks she's Carol, but she's not, and then Binary's trying to figure out who the hell she is, and her suit makes her look like a Canadian, but we're going to skip past that. And she eats the whole sandwich, and I was really upset because Jessica really wanted that sandwich, and I wanted her to have that kind of closure, but it didn't happen. And I was like, you probably could just buy another sandwich. You seem to be in, it's like a fast food place. I feel like you could do that. It comes on a tray. But of course, zombie vampires attack. I don't know. It's just wacky, you know, wacky fun times. And then the other Laurie L, the Kree accuser kind of person, comes back and like, oh no. And then they start fighting, and it's great. It's just super, it's fun superhero stuff. It's good old superheroes. You read this?
I did.
Okay.
I was way lost. cause I do not read Captain Marvel.
Okay.
But it was pretty entertaining. The Binary stuff, I was like, I don't get it.
I don't either.
Because Carol just was Binary.
It. Well, that's what we don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I went with it. I think Connor had, oddly enough, been reading this series all the way, and he kept talking about it, and I wasn't not reading on purpose. I actually lost track of it at some point. I missed mm-hmm. a couple, and I was like, I'll never catch up. And so then I just grabbed on and jumped on, and I've been fine with it. But it's all over the damn place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this case, it's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Well, I think that the interesting thing, and that, like, as I kind of dip in and out of just like the books that I read, but then like being forced to read some other books, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, and it's a great segue into the next book, Moon Knight number 13, Jed MacKay, Federico Sabatini, Rochelle Rosenberg, and Corey Pettit. Marvel's doing vampires again.
They sure are.
But this time, at least in Moon Knight, which I have been reading, sets it up really well.
To be fair, in Captain Marvel, I don't know why vampires attack right, the sub shop.
But it was interesting for me to jump into a book like Captain Marvel, which I haven't been reading a bit, being like, oh no, the vampire thing is not just in Moon Knight. Like I think it started
in Avengers.
It's in other places. It started in Avengers. I didn't realize. So in that, I assumed it was just, you know, being contained to Avengers, and then now seeing it kind of seep out, I'm like, oh, which makes Moon Knight.
What's your initial instinct when you see vampires in Marvel? Is it like, oh, great?
Look, I was there the first time we tried to make vampires big.
You wanted to make Marvel vampires happen?
Yeah.
What was that in?
That was the first time they rebooted X-Men. X-Men 1, okay. Curse of the Mutants. Or Curse of the Vampires. Okay. So Axel Alonso special is what that was.
Okay. We've done this zombie thing. What else can we do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Dracula was supposed to be the big bad of mm-hmm. the MCU, and it just no one cared. That was when they made Jubilee a vampire.
That's terrible. Like when you say it out loud, just like that's terrible. You know, it could work, like anything. But
yep.
So you're on the show. So Moon Knight's on the show,
of course. Are you reading this? Or are you?
No, I dropped off because at some point, like I had said too many times, I'm not a Moon Knight fan, and Connor's like, why do you keep reading it? And I was like, yeah, why do I keep reading it? And I was reading it because I like Jed MacKay a lot, and I was sticking with it. But eventually, I just lost. I didn't care.
That's fair.
So go on. Talk to me about what's great about it.
So Moon Knight has been... It's interesting. Like, this is a... Jed is putting Moon Knight through a fair amount of ringers, but finding new ways to kind of make the character a bit more sympathetic. So he runs the, he runs his mission basically, which is now, operating out of a, possessed building, which is it has a personality and everything.
Right.
It's fantastic. we just got out of this arc where Zodiac, was making Moon Knight's life hell. Obviously, you know, Moon Knight, you know, came out on top, but there's still a vampire problem that's happening in the city, and Moon Knight is killing a lot of them. And so in this issue you learn that there is, you know, there's basically Taskmaster is brought in to basically be a bounty hunter to try and take down Moon Knight, and he basically is like, that man is too crazy even for me to do. But he calls out basically like what's going on behind the scenes, I guess, you know, in New York / the Marvel Universe, where like there's basically like a vampire pyramid scheme. The issue opens up with some very cool, fun Moon Knight isms, right? Like there are about five vampires that he has staked to the roof of a building of a skyscraper, and says, "Look, the sun's rising. By the time we get to you, one guy at the end, you better tell me what I need to know." And sure enough, a whole bunch of vampires just burning at the stake. You just gotta love it, right? So it's this character called the Tutor, who is basically, you know, top dog of this vampire pyramid scheme, and Moon Knight's causing real pain for him. And throughout the issue, you basically get via Taskmaster, who is very much telling this guy like, nope, like Moon Knight is too crazy for me to go after. Kind of resetting like who and what kind of force of nature Moon Knight is. Like he compares Moon Knight to a hollow point, where he, like, he just goes through enemies and comes out, you know, comes out worse for it in a way, but like is unstoppable. And so it's a nice kind of resetting, but also setting up the kind of next couple issues of this book. But like the art is fantastic here. Moon Knight is one of the few books that Marvel does we're going to talk about Punisher in a little bit, where like the violence in Punisher almost feels too real. And at times it's just like, oh, mm-hmm. Moon Knight has, it's weird to say, but like fun violence, right? Where like, yes, people are getting cut and there's blood splatter and there's all kinds of like, just, you know, there's a lot going on there. But you almost kind of don't take it seriously, right? Because it's just like, oh, that's vampires, and there's a lot of slicing and dicing here. And basically, like, at the end of it, it looks like Jed MacKay is introducing two new antagonists, which he's kind of been introducing a lot of new characters.
Yeah.
In this book, and so he's adding two more who I don't know anything about, but they look like Fortnite characters, basically. In a sense that, you know, to be, you know, new antagonists for Moon Knight, and like, I don't know who they are. I don't care, but I'm still I'm excited for it. And then like the other big thing that this ends on is, it's really been, the book has really just been following Mark, through via Mr. Knight. Right. Or in a sense that like Mr. Knight is Mark, but kind of different from Mark. And so the question of when are we going to see Stephen Grant Lockley, etc., start to come up, and we're starting to see that the issue ends on that, where they basically say, like, I think it's time we talk. And this is something that I know a lot of Moon Knight fans have been waiting for, and it looks like we're getting there. But I'm more excited to see that now than I probably would have been, or I would have been excited in the beginning, but having Moon Knight gone on the journey that he's gone on, I'm now more excited to see this coming interaction. Because you've got Moon Knight, the superhero, which is Moon Knight in, like, the Declan Shalvey costume, right? And you have Mr. Knight, and then, obviously, Spectre and Lockley and Grant. So, like, where there was three personalities, now there are very much five. Which feels like a lot, but it works.
See, that's exactly what I can't. I can't tell who the hell the characters. But I never know what ground I'm standing on. Every time they do it, it's different. Which I guess is kind of the point. But I feel like I don't have a constant with it ever. And that.
Yeah.
It's a lot like the X-Men books, except I made a lot more attempts at Moon Knight. There's been runs of it that I really did like, but
yeah.
Overall, it's very dependent on what the book is at a given point.
True.
Did the TV show affect, like, how the book was done?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not even, like, if that were, like, and if it were, like, the TV show, I mean, very much leaned into the Egyptian lore of it all, and mm-hmm. this, for the most part, has really just kind of taken place in New York. There are aspect like there is new information about or new lore being added to the myth of Khonshu and all that. Mm-hmm. But no, it like this does not feel like a book. I mean, this feels like a book that was, you know, because Moon Knight was not a series for a long time, and then like right. the show came out, and they're like, well, we should probably have a Moon Knight book.
But I mean, they've been, you know, off and on. I mean,
but when Moon Knight ended the last volume at, I guess was issue 200, it was gone.
Max Bemis stuff.
The Max Bemis stuff.
What's that one? I feel like we went from one rate to the other, but I guess not.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a good, like, 6 to maybe 12 months before we got another Moon Knight book, another Moon Knight series. So like he was off the shelf for a while.
Huh. So as the world's biggest Moon Knight fan who's on my show right now.
Yep.
What'd you feel about what'd you feel about the show?
I mean, I liked it for what it was, right? I think it was the most, like a TV show that of the Disney Plus stuff.
Okay. As opposed to like a long movie with parts,
right? Yeah, as opposed to like a long movie broken up into parts. I mean, there's definitely things that like I think that they could have done better or elaborated on a bit more. But for what it was, right? Like I know a lot of people are like upset about the change to, you know, Stephen Grant and you know, the personalities in a sense, but like I thought the not getting even a hint of Jake Lockley until the very, very end, like, or like getting the reveal of the Jake Lockley thing at the very end, was great because it was the thing that like Moon Knight fans basically were like, well, when the hell is he showing up? Like asking mm-hmm. week after week. And they had been dropping hints and teases and stuff like that. And so that was a fun mystery to kind of resolve. But like, I mean, look, it was way more the Jeff Lemire run than I think anyone anticipated. Mm-hmm. Which was a great run. And I thought, like, you know, adapted pretty well. A little bit light on the characterization of some folks, but overall, I really enjoyed it.
That's good. Yeah. I made it two episodes in.
Yeah,
I really didn't like it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I mean, I legitimately jumped out of my chair at the end of that first episode when he's beating the hell out of that jackal, and I was like, yes.
So it's like it's a Moon Knight time for you.
Oh yeah, I am 100%. Here for it. Look, all I wanted was never in a million years did I think I would get a Moon Knight something as fast as we did.
Sure.
I thought I was going to be like 60. And then Marla will be like, all right, well, they're just crossing names off the list. Who do we got? Right. Ah, Moon Knight. All right, well, put it into production.
It was just Shang-Chi feature film. So really all bets are off the table.
I mean, that's it, right? And so it'd be great. I mean, like, look, this has gotten me a bit more excited to see Marvel delve more into the supernatural side of things. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there's a Werewolf by Night special coming out that's supposed to be, that's going to introduce some stuff that I don't think anyone will see coming. We've got Blade coming. It's only a matter of time before they do Ghost Rider again. Like, give me Midnight Suns, man. That's my jam.
See, that's the part of Marvel I don't think I love because...
Oh, I love Supernatural Marvel.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense, but I think to me, like, that's the part, like, well, other people do that. I don't need you to do that. I need you to do, you know, your Marvel stuff. But, yeah, you know, something for everybody, I guess. Now, you had mentioned The Punisher because you saw it on the script. I find this compelling, but I don't know what to make of it.
Same.
It's... I think I should hate it. I think, I think Connor hates it for all sorts. He'll pick a reason to hate it, and then that'll be the thing. But like,
right?
I should hate this. I don't even know, but I'm oddly compelled. I want to know where it's going, and I don't at all.
I'll admit this. This is a book that I flip through and like briskly read. Mainly because I think the art by Jesus Saez is so good, and it almost feels perfect for this. But it's 100%, I think, because of the Dave Stewart colors. But it's fascinating in that sense where, I get a lot of like Shadowland flashbacks by this because like that was kind of the whole thing, right? Where in Shadowland, Daredevil was possessed by the Beast. And you know, at that point was kind of running the hand. And so this feels a bit like Shadowland 2 Electric Boogaloo basically. But there's something about it being Frank Castle that I guess you buy the violence more. Than you did when it was, you know, when it was Daredevil.
That makes sense.
But the book looks great.
It does. It's, yes, I really like the Paul Azaceta stuff too. I was reading at some point and I was like, wait, is this, cause I love Paul Azaceta, but I didn't read that Kirkman book he was on for, I read it for like a while, but I sort of dropped off, but he was over there for a while because for those of you who don't know, working for Kirkman is a good gig. you know, he gets you the scripts, he pays you well, you get ownership in it, and people read it. So that's fine. But if you don't read any of those books, then you'll be like, what the hell happened to Chris Somney? Well, he's over there doing that, and no one can blame him for it. But the sort of common, it's like, it's a good book, despite everything. I mean, like, they stacked
it. Although Ares is back? I don't know. When did that happen?
I showed up. He's like the antagonist war god or whatever. And I was like, this is the character who's in Wonder Woman? But then he said something in this one. He's like, and I was an Avenger. And the idea is like...
This is the one that has a kid. Where is his kid?
I don't know. Like, I only vaguely recognize him from like, I read he was an Avenger. But he basically speaks that like he tried all these different things. You know, one of them was being an Avenger. And now he's just decided, no, I'm the god of war. And this is what I do. I'm into war. And, you know, it's a nice mythology in the sense that like when they come back and they say, oh, Frank Castle was always this and we didn't know it, that's terrible.
Yeah.
But this suggests that like Ares has been watching him for a long time. He knew what he was, but he didn't really, like if you didn't say that, it wouldn't change anything.
Right.
Which is like a relatively elegant way to say it. Because it's not like he's been guiding his hand or whatever, and all the terrible things it could be.
Lady Bullseye is in this too?
See, I kind of remember her. She was in the Brubaker stuff, but like nothing about her.
Like, same. Yeah. Like it's just like I say, like I flip through this and I go, well, this definitely pulls from an era
that I know very well, but didn't stick.
that I know very well and like did not really look fondly back on, right? Like
that's
it
true.
Was a lot of
it's
weird
funny
stuff.
If you look at the team, I'm trying to remember who did Lady Bullseye. It was Brubaker and Lark.
I think it was Lark.
That's a quality team.
Yeah.
They didn't need to do that. Over to Impact Winter number one from Image Comics. I picked this up because my pal Stephen Green, who had recently done the book of the title that I cannot remember with Jason Aaron and, oh, good Lord. The guy who changed, Dennis Hopeless, who isn't Dennis Hopeless anymore. He's Dennis. He has his real name, but anyway, so he did that book, and Stephen Green is a friend of mine. I've done work with him before, and I love his work. And I honestly, to this day, I cannot figure out why he's not working at the Big Two much more regularly. I think that's obscene. He's got a great imagination. And what this is a pretty basic apocalypse vampire story. The sun went out. The humans are all hiding. There are vampires. It's very similar to the Scott Snyder book right now where the sun's gone out and there's weird dark creatures, but they're not vampires. I don't know who Travis Beecham is, but he's clearly British. I think this takes place in England based on some of the turns of phrase in the thing. And while it is not the most original kind of story and it's not my favorite kind of story, it is well done. I think I put it like up the chart of like the stories like this. And I thought, oh, that was actually pretty skilled. I really like Steven's art, as I said. You got Matt Hollingsworth on colors. I don't know where the dude came from, but it's a good-looking book. You know, lots of good monster designs and things like that. And there's a little bit of personal drama and stuff like that. I enjoyed it, but it's not going to be my favorite book. But if that sounds good to you, then by all means. And so Daredevil...
Daredevil 649, but also Daredevil number one. Look,
for no
Chip
reason.
Zdarsky has cemented himself amongst the Daredevil greats. Daredevil is a book that more often than not, 95% of the time, just attracts top-notch talent.
Yes.
And Chip's run on Daredevil has like the Hell's Kitchen, Hell's Rain, whatever event that they just kind of wrapped up, and everything leading up to that. I loved every bit of it, and I thought it was great. And now, kind of where it just resets itself and continues on onward, right? Like I was kind of worried that Chip wasn't going to come back to Daredevil because he's also writing Batman as well.
And that was the question I was gonna: Are you allowed to be on Daredevil and Batman at the same time?
That's what I mean.
Are you,
right? Like,
is Frank Miller isn't Frank Miller the only one who can do that?
Right. And so I mean, and his Batman stuff is great too, but like, man, there is magic in what Zdarsky and Chichetto have together. And it could be remiss, obviously, not to mention Matthew Wilson and Clayton Cowles, but like, this is just good. It's so good. And it's not one of those things where just like I want to spend a ton of time just kind of like recapping why it is, but like if you like Daredevil, or even if right like it's Daredevil the Daredevil series does superhero drama in a way that I don't think is done with any other character, and I don't know if that's because like I'm a weird, lapsed Catholic in a way that like whenever they touch on that stuff with this character, like I feel it a bit more. But like, I just love it. And it's a great place to start, right? Like pick this up. If you dig it and you haven't read Daredevil or it's been a while since you read Daredevil, this gives you everything you need to know. And then I guarantee you it'll make you want to go back and read the rest of his run that he's done prior to this.
Which I think will read really well.
Oh,
like
100%.
In chunks. I think I think it's a big story, and it read well in issues, to be sure. But I think all is one piece. It'll be really nice. Yeah.
And then it's this issue, this issue gives you a team up with Spider-Man, and who doesn't love a Daredevil Spider-Man team up?
And a really weird, I don't mean that in a bad way, but like dynamic between them, where they broke the magic that people can't remember who Matt Murdock is. And so Spider-Man, like, it came back to him and everything. But then Spider-Man's like, I can't tell you who I am either, because there's weird magic on him. Why you can't remember, you know, you don't know who he is, because I have no idea what's going on in Spider-Man right now. Not that it isn't compelling, but I'm very lost, which I think is what's supposed to be happening. But that's a different book. I liked it. I liked this Daredevil issue. I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. I am, however, continually overawed. You know, Chichetto, by the way, can't draw bikes. Or he can't trace bikes or whatever it is. But from one panel to the next, they were two different bikes. And I went back and forth a couple of times. I was like, wait a minute, that's not the same bike. And, you know, I'm a cyclist. I know bikes. I know what they are. But both bikes were wrong. They wouldn't have been used there. And they were different bikes. Yeah. So fine. Whatever. He makes it up in all the other things he does. I just love that I can't pin Zdarsky down. I couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, there's that. I love when Chichetto, like, I love how Chichetto, sorry. I love when Daredevil's, like, baton things connected by the string, whatever that's mm-hmm. called. I like that Chichetto. I love when it's drawn like crazy string, like Quesada, you know.
Oh yeah. Did Quesada, it that way. I can see that. Yep.
And so like, I love that. And there's a lot of that here. But like there's the moment, you know, kind of through this where, you know, obviously Matt is talking to you, and it's this like grizzled, bearded man, and then the way that Chichetto kind of handles the shadows, and then there's, you've got the red glowing eyes, and then at the end of the issue where he comes out of the shadow and, you know, basically is like, you know, so yes, I'm scared because normally I fear nothing except God. And then obviously the lapsed Catholic in me was like, oh, I feel that. but
I really also like that. I mean, I think it's interesting that they never abandoned that part. I think a lot of characters who had like an affiliation with religion or whatever,
yep,
they kind of leave it behind, but they never leave it behind with him because it's such a big part of the character. And I think is absolutely the right choice. Yep. Because it sort of gives him, it roots everything in a motivation, basically. Yep. Real good. Those are the books that we wanted to talk about. But we are contractually obligated to talk about the patron pick, which is voted on by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. You'll hear more about that shortly. And the patron pick this week, by a nose, it was very close voting. There are many books left, was X-Men: Hellfire Gala #1. And what I thought was, didn't they do this recently? But apparently it has been a year since the Hellfire Gala. So my question to you is, were you up to date with this? Were you familiar with the last gala?
I knew what the last gala was. That's basically kind of when I stopped.
Okay. How much of the Hickman, not all Hickman, but you know, the Hickman created universe that was sort of taken over by a bunch of people, were you involved with?
I read Marauders off and on. I read X-Force and I'll tell you, like, I read Wolverine when Adam Kubert was doing the art, which he does this week. And if you love Wolverine and Deadpool together doing Wolverine and Deadpool things, nobody draws them better than Adam Kubert. So go check that out. But anyway,
excellent.
That was that, like, that's basically been it. And I thought reading this issue, it caught me up on most of the mutant drama and everything that was going on that I needed to know to basically, like, I guess get this sets up the new event, Judgment Day, in a way. And so I think Jerry Duggan does those kinds of things really well. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed this with the exception of a few kind of like eye-rolly moments. Mostly the cameos.
I agree with you in the sense that compared with a lot of other X-Men stuff that I have been forced to read by the patrons over the past couple years, when I read this, I was not completely lost, because I'd read bits of things here and there and like very vague strokes.
Yeah.
And I don't actually know who most of the characters are. Like, I recognize their names. That's about as far
like,
as I go.
I missed Inferno, and I knew some stuff had gone down with Moira, and I didn't really know what, but I thought this issue basically set up the fact that, like, oh, okay, Moira was a, we knew Moira was a mutant all along, and now she hates them and is a villain now. And
I'm like, okay. Classic yeah. X-Men. That's how it goes.
Right. Right. And, you know, then there was the bit that, you know, Sinister is going to Sinister, man. And, you know, that dude's on the council and everyone's like, oh, great, Sinister's going to work with us. And it's like, nope. Even when you think maybe he's turned a leaf, Sinister's going to Sinister. And I like that. And that, you know, very
Sinister's
much
one happened. Of those characters I don't understand or know anything about. Like, I missed it completely. And that's fine. It's really hard for me to judge a book like this. I know that it was very long.
Yeah.
It was 66 pages or something like that. So I think if you were into it, you were probably super happy. But, you know, I wasn't totally lost, but I don't think I understood the stakes that were happening, because it's so far removed. Like, this stuff does not exist really in other books.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty self-contained. So, you know, knowing what's going on with Iron Man or whoever else is in this is not going to help you.
Right.
And I was kind of hoping it would.
Well, I think the big thing was is that, like, I guess the world found out that the X-Men have been regenerating mutants.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's a big deal. Like, that's, like, you know, and so, like, I think that then it raises the weird questions about, like, the ethical nature of, like, the medicine and stuff that Krakoa is providing mm-hmm. the real world. And so, like, that's why the humans are, you know, like, the Avengers and stuff are all intrigued or interested.
Yeah.
And so that part I all got, right? Like, I understood why the yes. Avengers were there, when they weren't there last time. I got the Moira, you know, plot that was going. I got the Sinister plot that was going. And then then the book gave us a new X-Men team. That was the only part I was like, wait, why do we need a new X-Men team?
At least I was like, I guess this was the point of this. That was a lot of run up to that. And again, right. I don't really know
right.
what
like,
that
I know
means.
They held the vote, and that's how Firestar got in.
Right. And I like Far. So I get one of the, I think if I had a problem, besides my general lostness, is that when the gala, the main thing started, it wasn't terribly clear that's what, I don't know, the set looked just like it did in the other stuff, and right. some of the people were in their sort of regular costumes, and some people were dressed up, and fucking John Hamm was there for some reason I don't understand.
That was like, what? Why
I don't
is
know
John
if that's
Hamm
a
there?
Joke. I saw a picture that Jerry Duggan put up of him and John Hamm at Golden Apple, and I was like, that's weird. And then I was reading the book, and I was like, oh, John Hamm is in this, but there's no reason for that.
Right.
That I can tell. And maybe, like, it refers to something
Captain America's
that already happened.
Gala costume is just awful. I think it's just awful.
The costumes are awful. I mean, like, I guess that's what I'm getting at, is that when we switch to the gala part, I just feel like the costumes were weird. It looked like it was like a book that takes place in an alternate future kind of thing, rather than, like, I don't know. It was a way for them, like, it's a design choice that they made to go in a certain direction, and they did, and everything right. sort of fit in that. But, like, Scott Summers is like a samurai.
Do you have any idea who the characters were at the end?
You mean, like, the new team?
No. Like, who Moira was talking to at the very
I'm flipping
very
there.
End.
It's taken a very long time. It's a lot of pages.
One of the dudes throws a knife.
No idea. So that was a reveal. Walk in, dark shadowy room in the foreground. She's got blood all over her hands. And yeah, there's two people who both have sort of weird, similar haircuts.
Yeah.
The one guy throws a knife. I don't like the aesthetic of it. That's been the thing with these for a really long time. It's not the same thing as it's bad, but I don't know. I want it to be a thing that it isn't, or I don't even want it to be. I just want it to be something I can grab onto, but Can nobody draw Scott Summers like in clothes and have him not look like an idiot? There's something about that. I don't know.
I'll tell you what, though. The only thing I did like about this, I actually like the visor he's got going on here, and I would be okay if that was the visor he kept.
It's got a little Bluetooth speaker in either side, too, which is nice.
Like, it's like RoboCop meets, like, it's like RoboCop in the Jim Lee design kind of way. I dig it.
All right. I can kind of see that. I still don't like it. You know what it looks like? It looks like a Frank Miller drawing to me.
It does look like a Frank Miller drawing.
It absolutely looks like 80s Frank Miller.
Yep.
You know, I think there's probably somebody in Dark Knight Returns who looks like that. Yeah, the mutants. Oddly enough.
Yep, that's exactly it.
It's difficult to rate this. So let's give it a... Tony's stupid outfit really bothered me too. Like everything about it. He's got like a transparent coat and like a big dumb... turquoise belt with a matching wrist thing, and
the Spider-Man costume's weird
glasses.
Too, because like the black and red has we've solidified that is Miles's look, and so if it's not going to be Miles,
I really didn't like the costume designs in this, like at all. Like at no point did I go, "Oh, that's cool." Forge looks like Freddie Mercury,
but like Wolverine just shows up in a suit,
a tux with a bolo tie, which that's on brand. I'm cool with that. And Emma Frost, she's on brand. That works too.
Well, yeah, Emma Frost. I mean, that's Emma Frost.
But then,
is
like,
always dressed
Firestar is in her regular costume.
Yeah.
I don't know. So ratings. We got to give it a rating. What rating do you give this?
Was it out of
five?
I'll give it like a 3.5. I enjoyed it, and I felt like I felt like it caught me up with everything. Like if I were to start picking up the mainline X-Men books or whatever after this, I would feel well informed enough to not be mad.
So most of the things I don't like about it are subjective aesthetic choices that are right. To me
because you
because
hate high fashion.
So long. Yes, I do. I do also. That is part of it. Like I hate the galas. Like, I hate it. It's just pointless. It excites somebody, but it doesn't excite me. So to mix that with this other thing I don't really like makes it difficult. I suspect that if you like this kind of thing, you're going to like this a lot. That's what I suspect. You know, if you've been down with what's been going on with X-Men, if you like the last Hellfire Gala, I think this is your jam. So I'm going 2.75.
Oh.
Which is leaning largely on that and admitting my own ignorance and taste to a certain point, because that's not fair to be like, it's terrible. It's not terrible because I didn't like it. It's just something I didn't like.
Yeah.
But anybody who listens to the show and votes for an X-Men book knows exactly what's going to happen when that happens. Unless you're all waiting for the day that I'm like, you know what? I'm wrong. This is great. But that hasn't happened in some time. So that is the patron pick, and that happens because folks went to patreon.com/ifanboy to directly support the show. They vote on the patron pick every week. There's other things that have been unlocked by it. We are going to rejigger those things at some point soon. But, you know, there are talk explodes and book explodes and media explodes, and all the video shows were re-uploaded. More on that near the end. But we're switching those goals around. We'll see what happens with that. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com where there are 12 designs on t-shirts and other stuff that you want to put those on. I love seeing pictures of people in our shirts, and some dude, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name, sent me a picture of his two like teenage sons or, you know, like, you know, older kid sons, wearing two of our shirts and that they really liked them. And I was like, oh, those look like normal clothes, not just geek stuff, you know? And I'm really proud of those designs, and they're great. I wear mine. As long as I don't have to explain it to somebody too much, I choose it carefully based on that. You can go to ifanboy.com/support. There's a PayPal link that's sort of for direct. It's the old school way. Hey, you know what? You deserve a little bit of money because inflation, I think you should give more than you used to. ifanboy.com/Amazon. Seriously, I need you to give more. ifanboy.com/Amazon is a place where you will find the links to buy the books on Booksplode. You will find all the music, and each pick of the week issue is linked to Amazon on there. And if you use that link, there's an affiliate account. You can purchase things on Amazon. They will ting them to your house. It will cost you nothing extra, but we will get a little piece of that, which is pretty sweet. And we have partnered with bookshop.org to help local bookstores, and you will find links where we can fit those on the site. That is a way that... you know, you can give local bookstores your business, big system that sort of lets you buy from them directly, which is a good thing because the bookstores are an infinite good. That brings us to the other thing that happens when you are a patron is that at the $5 or higher level, you get a patron power. And I am first.
Yep.
Which is a problem because that just snuck up on me. So
I can go. I've got one ready.
You've got one ready?
I've got one ready.
Go ahead. We'll switch it up.
All right. So this is for Jimmy Heating. Has the power, no matter what, he does not have to spend extra money buying shelled pistachios. Because his superpower is he can buy a bag of regular pistachios and they will become shelled.
So my immediate question is this limited only to pistachios?
It does not work with sunflower seeds.
Or walnuts, peanuts?
Yep, no, just pistachios.
It's very specific.
Well.
You like pistachios is what I'm learning.
I do.
They're very good nuts. I'm not sure if they're officially nuts or not, but I feel like they're one of those things that they call a nut, but they're really not. I don't know. Point is, they are delicious. But as soon as you said pistachio, the first thing that went to my head, I was like, those are expensive. I literally, like, they
are.
They're
more expensive to buy unshelled.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. No, that makes sense. So if you're trying to save, if you love pistachios and you're trying to save on it.
Look, all Jimmy's got to do, right? Look, he wants to make some money here. He buys the shelled pistachios, uses his power to deshell them in an instant, and then just resells them at a dollar or two less of the shelled pistachios, and he's got a business.
Well, this brings in other questions, though, because starting a business where you're selling foodstuffs, not easy.
Sure.
You got to get into the Walgreens, all that stuff. Can he do it in, like, does he look at a bag? Does that take a certain amount of time, like a bag versus like a barrel of pistachios? Nope. It's just an instantaneous thing. Does it require more effort?
He puts his hand on the container.
Okay.
And no more shells.
Well, someone still has to bag those.
Someone's got to bag them.
The shells disappear. Well, they just fill up bags with shelled ones.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. So Raja Perumal has X-ray vision, but it is non-intrusive. Nobody needs to worry that he's looking at you naked because it's not that kind of X-ray vision. It's a useful, tactile, not pervy kind of X-ray vision. And it makes people feel safe around and becomes useful as opposed to, again, the pervy kind.
Being just basically he can't see people nude.
I mean, he could, but only if they wanted to show him themselves nude. You see.
But so is this a thing where he has to say, like the person has to say?
No.
Yeah.
No. He can tell everybody he has X-ray vision and they won't feel uncomfortable around him.
Oh, okay.
Because he's just seeing through walls and stuff. He's seeing what's going on in the other room, but like not the bathroom. If it's anywhere that might make someone feel uncomfortable, this is millennial X-ray vision. That's what it is. It's about not making anybody feel uncomfortable ever. And that's what happened with Raja this week. And it's just how it's going to be.
Here we go.
We are running a little long, but let's do this first email that we've got here. This was actually on here last week and we didn't get to it. So right. Eric F. says, a few years ago, Dan Abnett had his run on Aquaman and it was good. Especially the issues with, I can never say this name, Stepan Sejic. I remember thinking this is probably the best Aquaman I've ever read. I decided to test the theory by reading, quote, the best Aquaman runs. Couldn't tell you what those are, buddy. Nope. And for me, Abnett's was my favorite. However, in retrospect, nobody cared much. There was a deluxe edition printed of that work, but it's unlikely to be remembered, which is fine. It was good, not great. So my question is a two-parter. That's a very long intro, but I think it all makes sense. A, imagine if there was an Aquaman book at Batman Year One level of quality. A great Aquaman book. Would it even make ripples? Could you get people to care about Aquaman? It strikes me that Batman Year One is a perennial bestseller, whereas Daredevil Born Again is a fraction as well known. And B, is a great Aquaman book even possible? Are there characters who are strange enough or what they tap into is not defined enough that the best possible work they could star in could only be good and not great. I've been thinking about this question since 2017. Let's start with A. If there was a super high quality, amazing Aquaman book, would it become one of those big perennials or no?
I mean, I think the Daredevil comparison's probably a good one. I just don't think Aquaman's not Batman.
In the same way that
Daredevil's not Spider-Man.
Right, and I think that if you're given anything, it would be comparable to the Mazzucchelli run, but yeah. Maybe something like the Longbow Hunters. You know, like it could be that good. Like it's a book.
I was thinking like you could what Diggle did with Green Arrow.
Yep.
Is great.
Did Jack Kirby's story? Got it. Yep.
Yeah, and like that's. That's a book that I think, like, you know, like I said, the Green Arrow ones, I think the year one book, I think is what it is, that you can give anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would become a Green Arrow fan after that. I think it just comes down to just the character's popularity. Like he's just like, I mean, Superman's not as popular as Batman.
I think what he's getting at, and this gets into our second question, you know, like, Is the possible? Basic premise of Aquaman good enough?
I'll do a classic Jeff Loeb-ism that he would always say in the Marvel retreats. There are no bad characters, only bad stories. And I think it's possible.
Do you think that there's an element of appeal of a certain kind of character, though? Meaning, you know, there's a reason that Superman and Batman are kind of a base level thing. They're not fish, which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, I don't want Aquaman to be good. And I don't mean that, like, I don't want it to be successful or there to be good runs. But when I look at Aquaman, I don't ever think, I think this guy, he just needs a good story. I would really love to read a great Aquaman. I don't think that. I just think, it's Aquaman. Sometimes you get some Aquaman, sometimes you don't.
I'll tell you what, though. Like, Stefan Sajic is, like, I will almost always look at anything that he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think paired with a good writer, I think, like, in this sense, right, you know, Dan Abnett, I remember checking it out. I don't remember sticking with it, but I think that's more because, kind of what you were getting at, right? Like the core of what Aquaman is and like what he does is just not something that's interesting to me. But I think also too, I felt like that story when it happened was just kind of following the status quo where you have someone like year one, you have something like year one or whatever. Like those were stories that were started that were meant to break a bit from the mold to, you know, to make a statement. And so
how about this though? Maybe Aquaman is just not cool.
I didn't know.
And I don't mean like he's not cool. I just mean like there's certain things like Batman is cool. Like when you look at him, you're instantly like, that's cool. And I don't think Aquaman is ever going to have that cachet.
I think part of it also, too, may be because DC Comics seems to get a little gun-shy when it comes to aligning their comics Aquaman to movie Aquaman. I think Jason Momoa's Aquaman is infinitely more interesting than the Aquaman we get in the books.
Well, I mean, that really does bring about the fact that, like, it was a very successful film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, theoretically right there, that Aquaman was more popular than probably any Daredevil comic ever.
Yeah.
Just because.
That Aquaman has more swagger.
But that's sort of like a zeitgeist thing. Like, people are into that right now. Like, that's
sure.
Sort
but
of
like,
a thing.
But even still, but there are some key characteristics of that version of the character that I think would resonate more and could stick around longer term.
Mm-hmm.
If they made the, you know, if they decided to make the switch.
The problem is, though, is that the Aquaman movie was so fucking boring, I couldn't get out of there soon enough. I was so not into it, and it went on for hours. But I don't know. I think Aquaman is probably one of those movies that, like, some people just love, and they don't know why anyone else doesn't, and then everybody else hates it, and there's no real rhyme or reason to that.
Right.
I think that's how that goes. I'm sure there Connor would have been better to have here for this, by the way. But he loves Aquaman, so it's like, you know, he's not a good source for that. I do think though that and we'll wrap it up and we'll move on from this. I think that because he's not a great basis of a character, like there's history and everything, and all that stuff's kind of interesting. But I think that if you made one that was, I think a really great Aquaman run would be really fun because you do not expect it.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you love to be able to go, oh man, this Aquaman book is amazing. Mm-hmm. In a way, that would be better than an Amazing Batman book, because I've seen Amazing Batman books.
Right.
You know, but if there was like, it's like that first run of Flintstones that Mark Russell did. We were like, mm-hmm. oh my God, this Flintstone books is amazing.
But that Flintstone book was so visually jarring.
Yes.
Like, that's what got people in. Like, I need to see what a Flintstone book that looks like this is all about.
Yeah, and you know, you couldn't put Steve Pugh and Mark Russell on Aquaman and get that thing, but something, somebody.
Marvel made people care about Hawkeye.
Yeah. Yeah. But
right, I like, mean, nobody cared about Hawkeye until
not true.
Traction and Aja came around.
I did.
I mean, yeah, you no, did,
no.
but...
No, you're right, but nobody could also get him right, you know, Ben, right. It's... Times changed, whatever. No, I think you're right. You're right about that. So...
But like moments like that happen for characters, and I feel like it's just the right creator has not come around for Aquaman, right? Like Captain Marvel's another, you know, good example of that, right? Where like,
yeah,
without that kind of radical change or just like, you know, or approach to the story, like you just don't get it.
It's time for somebody to make their big Aquaman pitch.
Yeah.
And do it. That Andy Diggle jock run, which you brought up, though, yep. I think that one had a chance.
I go back to that every once in a while, and I still love it just like the first time I read it.
And I was being
zero
flippant.
Affinity to Green Arrow or any of that. I think those are two creatives working at yes. their best, you know, on a killer story.
And I was sort of being flippant about Jack Kirby, but I only say that because I was shocked to learn that, like, that whole origin with the island and everything is Jack Kirby's story. I was like, that's yep. amazing. Yep. I had no idea about that, and it just made me really excited. So, you know, if somebody's going to go ahead and pick that stuff up, that's great, because that's the legacy stuff that we all know and love. There are, okay, so if you want to write to us, you can write to contact@ifanboy.com. You can also, if you want to write into our Media Explode show, which we do mail much less often, but here we are, you can put Media Explode in the subject line, and we will put it in the separate little folder for that when we do those shows. There are other shows. There's the Media Explode that we just talked about, the Summer Mailbag Show, which we just did, just came out this last week and is there for your perusal. There is a special edition of Thor Love and Thunder coming later this week, probably sooner. Connor and I are just about to record it, and then it will be up soon. I think it'll be after this show, or maybe before. It might exist already. I don't know. Connor does the schedule, and he's not here. And then finally, I have a Talksplode. With Rainbow Rowell, that will be out a little later this month. Spoke with her for a good while. I found her to be absolutely delightful. And boy, was she there for her Runaways run. That was not a throwaway gig. She was down with it, as was Chris Anka. And I think it really, and listening to her talk about it, it's one of those things, Ron, that you love hearing creators just be super passionate about mm-hmm. the thing that they did. So that is coming up. That'll be good. You can find all of our shows at ifanboy.com, as well as many, many years of great comic book writing and podcasts and all that stuff. It's all up there. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Follow @ifanboy on Twitter and @ifanboycomics on Instagram. Individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. Jim, what are your where's your social media presence?
Jim Viscardi everywhere.
Well, that's pretty good. You were on it early, obviously.
Yep. It's the only reason I went to gym. It was why, because I could just grab the social handles. No, that's not the reason.
Oh, but. I was like, were you James before this all went down? Wow. And comicbook.com, obviously.
That's right.
At comic that's where you. I have not mentioned that, but that is your. That's your thing.
That's my thing.
A big deal. So that's rad. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy to keep up to date with the old video show re-uploads. But wait, you do not keep up to date with them, because this week we put the summer of 2008 wrap-up, which, I mean, that's something you want to check out, to see what you missed 14 years ago in the summer, and the top five X-Men-related bases. So they're not just X-Men bases, but they're X-Men-related, X-Men-adjacent bases. And those, my friends, are the last two minis to be uploaded. The entire thing is there now.
Is that back from when you guys were sitting on that couch?
Those are, yeah, but the minis were the daily shows, the weekday ones. We didn't tend to do those together.
Right.
So it was the time period when the minis were going and we were doing the weekly shows and the site was full of content. That was when we had a benefactor who said, hey, just go do your thing.
Whose couch was that?
It was either Connor's couch or my couch. Oh. Green walls is my house.
Ah.
Other color walls is his house.
Okay.
So there.
I remember those days.
His sounded better because it was more covered with rugs and stuff like that. And mine was very echoey because it was a hardwood floor. Those are production things that no one remembers, but I do. You want to do this next bit?
Yeah, sure. If you dig the show, write us a review. Leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Better yet.
You're probably very familiar with the algorithm, the all-seeing, all-knowing algorithm.
Correct. Very important.
It's very important you do those things. You leave star ratings, you write the reviews, that stuff. You must feed the algorithm.
Here's the thing, right? Here's the thing about the telling your friends part, right? I know there are a bunch of you out there who are either in, like, you're in a Facebook group or you've got some group chats going on. All you got to do is just take the link, drop it in there and say, hey, this is a show I listen to on a weekly basis. I thank you because we share common interests because of the Facebook group that we're in that is comics. We are all comics fans or something. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to bring new people to the show. Go do
that. I feel like I have this like feeling like everybody who was going to listen to the show did, and everybody who was going to know about it either did or didn't listen to it. So you just said like a group of comic book people, and I was full of myself enough that I thought, oh, they all know about it already. But then bad enough about myself that I was like, but they decided not to listen. They've already made up their mind. That's where I went with that.
Right. Or, you know, like go to your comic shop, see if they know about the show. If they don't, they should. And tell them about it.
Unless they're like, well, why is this guy on here talking about X-Men when he clearly doesn't like X-Men? And you know what? I'm going to tell you right now, that is a valid complaint, except it wasn't my choice. It's not, I would say the same thing to Han Solo if I had just betrayed him to Darth Vader. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. Yeah. And that is a program at its completion. So thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us, Jim. You can be found at comicbook.com, podcasts, things like that. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you possibly disappear entirely at San Diego Comic-Con next week?
No, I mean, look, we got Comic-Con coming up. I got a decent guest list. Folks coming by. We're going to be doing a studio. It's a lot of interviews. I'm going to interview for the first time Bill Sienkiewicz.
Really?
Yeah, I know him. We have talked before, but I have never had the opportunity to interview him.
He's a person who I want and imagine to be very enigmatic and mysterious, and I suspect he's not.
This is a little bit of a tangent, and I know we're running late on time, but I got it. So we put this thing together, and we're trying to do this as big movies and stuff come out. But when Moon Knight came out, we at Comic Book did this thing called Creator on Creators, which is kind of like the actors on actors thing or whatever. But anyway, we put Brian Michael Bendis and Bill Sienkiewicz on a Zoom together with all intentions to talk about Moon Knight and just let the two of them talk to each other for about an hour. And it was fascinating. It was incredible. You should go, like, if you like those two guys and just talking about comics, by all means, go check that out. But anyway, I'm excited.
Have you done others? Are there other ones too?
I tried to put one together for Thor that would have been Jason Aaron and Walt Simonson, but we just couldn't make it happen. Ooh. But we're planning on trying to make some more of those.
That's very cool. And you're one of the places that's got the power to do that. So
that's right.
Pay attention to that. That sounds super cool.
Yep. So, but anyway, like I said, we'll have a ton of Comic-Con stuff coming out. So if you need to know what's happening in the world of what Comic-Con has become, check out comicbook.com.
Yeah, there might be some comic books there if you look hard enough.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much. That's your show. I usually go last, but that isn't going to work this time. So I'm Josh.
I'm Jim.
Thank you to everyone for listening.
Johnny's daddy. I give it all. Ooh. Ooh. Put me in the bed now. Ooh. Now.